He's like over 40. So? He's what they call a silver fox. You know who's into those? I have no idea. One of the pastels? Oh, hell no. Those girls wouldn't know what to do with an adult male, let alone one with a few decades under his belt. Jordan's older sister. She's 22 and constantly bringing home old guys. The last one actually had gray hair, and I swear he was older than Uncle Brian. I can't decide whether she's super kinky and these are the only guys who know what they're doing, or if she has daddy issues. My insult to Jordan at her party might have hit a little too close to home then. Probably didn't help, Valerie says cheerfully. I'm hanging up now, because I'm seriously thinking of vomiting up my lunch over this discussion. I lay the phone down and try to scrub any thoughts of Callum doing kinky things from my brain. Fortunately, Durand is available, and Valerie is brought to the royal estate in quick order. Wow, this place is so... She gropes for the right word as she gapes at my bedroom. I supply several. Juvenile, girly, an homage to Valentine's Day gone wrong. She falls backward on the pink ruffled bedspread. Interesting. That's one word for it. I settle into the white, fur-covered vanity chair and watch Valerie bat at the sheer curtains that hang around the four-poster bed. Want something to drink? I actually have a mini-fridge in here. I open the glass door of the beverage cooler situated under the counter of the vanity. Sure, I'll have diet whatever. Besides the pink, this is a great room. Television, posh bed. She touches the bedspread. Is this silk? I have my hand in the fridge when she drops that bomb. I'm sleeping on a silk blanket. Technically, you sleep under it. I mean, you don't have to, but you're supposed to sleep on the sheets and under the coverlet. Valerie looks all concerned, as if my upbringing was so bizarre I might not know about sheets. Sadly, she's not that far from the truth. I know that, smartass. I pull out a Diet Coke and shove it in her hand. I pop one open for myself. It's just weird. I went from sleeping bag to silk blankets or, excuse me, coverlets. I correct myself before Valerie can. But enough about bed stuff. I need intel. Tell me everything you know about the Worthingtons, I order. The telecom Worthingtons or the real estate Worthingtons? She asks, her mouth still around the opening of the pop can. I have no clue. They live close to here and are having a beach party tonight? Oh, then the telecom Worthingtons. They live about 5 houses down. She holds up her can. Do you have a coaster? I throw her a notebook which she uses to set her can on. Brent Worthington is a senior. He's super uptight, although more about name recognition than money. His girlfriend Lindsay's parents had to declare bankruptcy a couple of years ago and pulled Lindsay from Astor Park because they couldn't afford the tuition. But Brent never broke up with her because Lindsay is a Dar. What do the Dars do? I ask. Valerie laughs and shakes her head. No, that's not a last name. Daughters of the American Revolution. She can trace her family tree back to one of the original 3 boats that came over from England. That's a thing? I gape. Yep. So what's going on? The royals are going there tonight and told me to stay away. Why? Those parties are pretty bland as far as high school events go. They lock all the doors in the house because Brent doesn't want anyone having sex in the rooms. There's one bathroom that people are allowed to use, and it's right off the patio. The pool house is locked, too. Brent has it catered and likes for everyone to show up like they're about to go yachting. He even wears his country club sports coat, and all of the girls wear dresses, no exceptions. Sounds terrible. If the royals had given me this rundown, they wouldn't have even needed to warn me away. But they did, so that means something is happening that they don't want me to see or be a part of. Would Daniel Delacorte be invited? She considers it and then nods slowly. Yeah, his father is a judge. I think Daniel plans to be one too, and you can't have too many judges as your BFFs, right? It occurs to me then and there that this is why the rich get richer. They form these bonds in high school, maybe even earlier, and when they get older, they just continue to scratch each other's backs. Did something happen between you and Daniel the other night? I know you were hungover, but Jordan said you were so trashed. Reed had to carry you out of Ferris's house. He didn't do something. She looks worried. I don't want to tell Valerie about the awfulness of that night. But if she's going to be involved, then she deserves something. He thought I was easy. I'm not. And the royals don't like it when their maybe not really but kind of sister is messed with. Let's leave it at that. She screws up her face. God, what a douche. But why am I here if the royals are already exacting revenge? I don't know if they are, only that three of them told me I wasn't to come to the Worthington party tonight, no matter what. Valerie's eyes light up. I love that you don't care what the royals think. She hops off the bed and throws open my closet door. Let's see what Worthington-approved dresses you have. I drink the rest of my Coke as Valerie rifles through and discards item after item. You need more clothes. Even the Carringtons stuff my closet full of anything I want. It keeps up appearances, you know. I didn't realize Callum was that stingy with you. He's not, I answer, stung on Callum's behalf. I had to go shopping with Brooke, and the places she took me were too expensive. Everything around here is expensive. Valerie waves her hand. Think of it as an extension of your uniform. Besides, if you look bad, then people will think the same thing I did. That Callum is being cheap with you. Aha! She pulls out a navy sundress with tiny cap sleeves and a deep V-neck edged in white lace. I don't remember seeing it, which means Brooke must have picked it out when I wasn't looking. This is nice. It has a deep neckline that says I'm sexy, without saying I charge $50 and I'd like my cash up front. I'm bowing to your better judgment. In my former line of work, you'd need a neckline a heck of a lot deeper than that to get $50 up front. I cross the room and start to change. It's getting late, and I want to make sure I head over to the party before the fireworks start. You okay if I borrow this dress? Valerie drapes a white lace number against her body. Knock yourself out. She's an inch shorter than me, and given the length of the skirt, the hem should hit her around mid-thigh. Out of curiosity, how many dresses do I need? Two seems plenty. A couple dozen. I whirl around, but Valerie looks dead serious. You're joking. I'm not. She hangs the dress back in the closet and starts poking up her fingers one by one. You need afternoon dresses, boating dresses, clubbing dresses, both the country club and the nightclub kind. My head is spinning. Garden party dresses, official school party dresses, after-school dresses, wedding dresses, funeral dresses. Did you say funeral dresses? I interrupt. Valerie points her finger and winks. Just making sure you are paying attention. She laughs when I roll my eyes and starts undressing. You do need a lot more clothes than you have. Appearances are important, even to the royals. Her voice is muffled as she pulls her shirt over her head. Example. Say even the most minor negative thing about Maria Royal, and all her sons go crazy. Reed almost got locked up for assault after some kid from Southeast High called her a pill-popping suicide case. He accused Maria of killing herself? I exclaim, shocked by that. Valerie looks around as if expecting to see Reed jump out at her. Then she lowers her voice and says, "It's a rumor, and one the royals don't like. They even sued Maria's doctor for malpractice. Did they win? It was settled, and the doctor left the practice and the state, so, yes? Wow. Anyway," Valerie continues, "they're fiercely protective of their mom, and I'd guess it would be important that people outside of the family believe they're treating you right." A pang hits me. Is that what Reed is doing? Just making sure he upholds the family reputation? No, it can't be. All the things we did in here, on that silk blanket, and under it, were private and had nothing to do with any royal reputation. I check the clock and realize I need to hurry. I change in a rush, but when I look in the mirror, I see a problem. Val, this neckline is too low. I turn so she can see that the white bow of my bra is showing. She shrugs. You'll have to go without. Wear band-aids if you're worried about nipping out. I guess. Although being in the same zip code as Daniel without wearing a bra kind of skeeves me out. It takes us another half hour to fix our hair and makeup, I actually do Valerie's face. She's astonished at the amount of makeup I've accumulated. You might need dresses, but your makeup kit is thebomb.com, she exclaims. Thanks, but you need to shut up now so I don't get lipstick on your teeth. I wave the lipstick brush at her threateningly, and she closes her mouth obediently. Once we're ready, we wait around for the royals to leave. There's a general slamming of doors and scuffling of feet in the hall. At least one set stops at my door. There's a deafening bang that makes me wince, followed by Easton's voice. You okay in there? We'll be home early-ish. Don't care, I call back, pretending to be pissed. And don't knock on my door again, I'm mad at you, all of you. Even Reed? Easton jokes. All of you. Aw, come on, sis, this is for your own good. Suddenly, I don't have to fake my anger. You royals wouldn't know what was good for me if it was shoved in your face by a Playboy bunny. Valerie gives me two thumbs up in encouragement. Easton heaves a big put-upon sigh. Of course I wouldn't be able to see anything if a Playboy bunny was in front of me. I'd be too busy ogling her tits to pay attention to anything else. Valerie can't stop herself from laughing. Don't, I hiss. You'll only encourage him. I hear you, and yes, I am encouraged, Easton calls out from behind the door. We'll be home in a couple of hours. Wait up, and we'll all watch a movie. Go away, Easton. He shuffles off. Easton's adorable. If I wasn't so in love with Tam, I'd pursue Easton hard, Valerie admits. I don't think catching him is the problem, I reply dryly. No? Then what is? Keeping him. Chapter 27. Carrying our shoes, Valerie and I walk down the shoreline toward the Worthington place. What stops people from crashing the party? I ask curiously. Can't anyone just walk down this beach and then up into the house? They'd know you didn't belong just by the clothes you were wearing. Plus, the only people who have access to this beach live on it, and unless you can afford a $10 million pad, you won't be on this sand. Will we be turned away? The thought hadn't even occurred to me because I've never encountered parties like this before. Nope, because you're Ella Royal, and even though I'm a poor relation, my last name is still Carrington. We don't even get far enough in to be confronted by Brent Worthington, because the five royal brothers are clustered together at the edge of the property. They're cooking something up, just like I knew they would be. And it's definitely a scheme to get back at Daniel, because who else could they be targeting? If anyone deserves to get revenge, it's me. I stomp right up to their group and they don't even notice. Hey, big bro, what's going on? I poke Gideon in the back. Reed swivels around and chastises me first.
What are you doing here? I told you to stay home. So did I.
Gideon looks down at me with a tight-lipped frown.
Me too.
Easton tosses in his 2 cents. And you two? I look pointedly at the twins, both of whom are dressed in identical khaki shorts and white polo shirts with an alligator over their left peck. They blink innocently at me. There's no way to tell them apart tonight, which might be exactly what their girlfriend enjoys. I'm going to have to mark one with lipstick before the night is over. Well, newsflash, I'm not a dog. I don't just sit and stay because you order me to. Why was I supposed to stay away anyway? Are the drinks drugged here, too? Behind me, Valerie gasps, which sends 5 annoyed glares in my direction.
No, Gideon says. But if something bad goes down, Dad wouldn't be as angry if you were home and tucked in your bed.
Or making out with Valerie, Easton pipes up. But in bed and at home were the important things, he adds hastily, when it's his turn to get a number of condemning stares.
You being here might tip off Daniel that we're planning something,
Reed says, his scowl deepening. Valerie steps to my side. If the plan was to not be suspicious, then Easton should have his tongue in someone's mouth, Reed should be whispering sweet nothings to Abby, gag me, Gideon should be doing college stuff, and you two, she waggles a finger between the twins, should be pranking people because damn if I can tell you apart.
Easton covers a laugh with a fake cough, while the twins pretend to be looking anywhere but at Valerie. Reed and Gideon exchange a long look. When it comes to the royal brothers, these two are in charge, at least for tonight.
Since you're here, there's no point in making you go home, but this is royal business.
Gideon gives Valerie a pointed look. She's quick. Suddenly, I feel very thirsty. I think I'll go shake down the host for a glass of champagne.
After Val leaves, I rub my hands together. So what's the plan?
Reed is going to start a fight and beat the ever-loving shit out of Daniel?
Easton informs me. That's a terrible plan. They all turn to me again. Being the single focus of five royals is kind of overwhelming. I focus on Reed and Gideon, the two that I need to convince.
You think you're just going to goad Daniel into a fight?
Both brothers shrug. And I'm sure you think it's going to work because all of you would fight to defend your name. But this guy has no honor. He's not a fair fighter. He's the type of guy who drugs a girl because he wasn't confident or patient enough to win her over. He's a coward.
I wave a hand over Reed's insanely ripped body. Reed has 20 pounds on him and fights regularly.
She knows about the fighting? Gideon interrupts.
Reed gives an abrupt nod, and Gideon flicks both hands at us as if he's done with our high school asses.
He's still gonna want to defend himself, Reed argues.
I bet you $100 he'll laugh and say that he knows you're going to win. Then, if you try to push it, you'll look like the bad guy.
I don't care.
Fine. If all you want to do is beat him up, then just go do it. I point to the back lawn, which is getting crowded.
Reed can't throw the first punch, Easton interjects.
Puzzled, I look from one brother to another. Is this some kind of fight club rule?
No. Dad caught Reed fighting a few months ago. Said if he caught him doing it again, he'd ship the twins off to military school.
Wow, that's diabolical. I know that Reed wouldn't care about going to military school, or at least not care that much, but he'd hate it for the twins. Callum is constantly surprising me.
So you can't hit anyone ever? No, I can't throw a punch unless I'm defending myself or a family member from imminent harm. Those were his exact words,
Reed says through clenched teeth.
If you have a better idea, spit it out.
I don't, and they all know it. Gideon shakes his head, and even Easton looks disappointed with me. I stare at the dark blue sky, then at the ocean, up at the house, and then back at the brothers. An idea sparks. Do the Worthingtons have a pool house?
Yeah,
Reed says warily. Where is it? The Royals' pool house is made almost entirely of glass, so you can see the ocean from one side and the pool from the other. I tug on Reed's arm. Show me. Reed helps me up over the rocky ledge and onto the back lawn. He points to a dark structure standing just to the edge of the concrete deck, around the large rectangular pool.
Worthington keeps it locked.
So no one can have sex in there, Valerie told me. This is all so perfect. I run my eyes over the twins.
If this involves me dressing up as a woman, I'm out.
Sawyer holds up a protesting hand. At least I think it's Sawyer, by the fading burn on his wrist.
Let me get Valerie. It's gonna take two of us, and I'll need both of the twins. The rest of you pretend like you're at a party. When the time is right, Sawyer will come out and let you know. You'll need to gather as much of the crowd as you can by the pool. Maybe get your cameras ready.
What do you have planned, little sis?
Easton sidles up to me. Hell hath no fury, like a woman scorned. Or a girl drugged against her will, I say mysteriously, and run off to look for Valerie. I find her chatting up Savannah halfway between the shore and the pool, which is some kind of perfect serendipity. Hey, can I talk to you guys for a minute? Valerie has to drag Savannah, but I manage to sequester the two of them off to the side. I address Savannah first. Look, I want to apologize for not listening to you the other night. I was lonely and wanting someone I couldn't have, so I thought I'd hang with Daniel. That was a mistake. She presses her lips together, but either my genuine regret or our mutual hatred of Daniel breaks down her icy barriers. I accept your apology,
she says stiffly.
Oh, Sav, get the stick out of your ass, Valerie chides. We're here to get Daniel back, right, Ella?
Savannah quirks an interested eyebrow in my direction, and I nod enthusiastically. Here's the plan. After I explain the details to them, Valerie hoots, but Savannah looks skeptical.
You really think he's gonna fall for this?
Savannah, the guy drugs girls for sex. He's not going to turn this offer down. It's a power trip for him, and we're going to feed into that.
She lifts an elegant shoulder.
All right, I'm in. Let's take this jackass down. Daniel is sitting on a lounge chair next to the pool, with a Heineken in one hand and the thigh of a young-looking girl in the other. She has to be a freshman. A renewed sense of righteousness washes over me. Daniel has to be stopped. Like Savannah said, it's time to bring him down.
Hi, Daniel. I adopt the most submissive tone I can muster.
His head jerks up, and he scans the crowd looking for the royal brothers. When he doesn't see them, he leans back, pulling the girl closer to his side, almost as if she's a shield.
What do you want? I'm busy.
I scuff the toe of my ballet slipper in the stamped concrete.
I wanted to apologize for the other night.
I overreacted.
You're Daniel Delacorte, and I'm...
I fight back my gag reflex.
A trumped-up nobody.
The girl shifts uncomfortably.
I think I hear my sister calling for me.
She slips out from under Daniel's hand. When he protests, I jump in.
I just need Daniel for a minute, and then he's all yours.
Daniel smirks.
Just a minute. I last a lot longer than that.
The girl titters and runs away. I get it. It's awkward as hell watching someone humiliating himself. The minute she's out of earshot, Daniel's careless smile turns into a glower.
What are you playing at?
I want another chance. I lean forward so that my cleavage is on display for him. I made a mistake. If you just told me what you wanted, I wouldn't have overreacted.
God, I can't believe I have to say this crap to him. His eyes drop to my gaping neckline, and he licks his lips like an awful pig.
The royals didn't seem really happy.
They were mad because I made a scene. They want me to shut up and stay out of sight.
Yet you're here.
Their dad makes them bring me. He frowns.
So you want to get back at them? Is that it?
Honestly? Kind of. I lie. Because I think sticking it to the royals might be something that will appeal to him. I'm tired of those jerks forcing me to act like something I'm not. I shrug. I like to party, and I like to have fun. I was trying to be all proper for their sake, but that's not who I am.
Daniel looks intrigued.
So let's stop pretending. Whatever you want, I'm down for. And not just me. I point to some vague area behind me. You know Valerie, right?
He nods, his gaze dropping back to my chest.
I told her about your friends, Zoe and Nadine, and she's interested.
We thought...
I trail off and brace my hand next to Daniel's knee. I bring my lips close to his ear.
We thought we could show you what Astor Park girls can do.
We're both dancers, you know.
Yeah?
His eyes light up.
And you can do whatever you want with us.
I tease. He seems more than interested now.
Anything?
Anything and everything. Feel free to bring your camera. You might want to keep mementos.
Where?
His hand slips between his legs.
Ugh, is he feeling himself up right in front of me?
I clamp my lips together so I don't Ralph all over his lap. The pool house. I picked the lock. Meet us there in 5 minutes. I waltz away without looking back. If I've misjudged Daniel, this isn't going to work, and I'll have to eat crow to the royal brothers. But I don't think I'm wrong. Daniel Delacorte has an opportunity to degrade 2 trumped-up nobodies and take pictures of them that he can show all his pervy buddies. No way is he passing up that golden opportunity. As I let myself into the small structure, Valerie pops up from one of the 2 chairs that she and Savannah dragged away from the floor-to-ceiling windows. Like the royals' pool house, this one is nearly all glass, so that the view from the house to the ocean is unobstructed,
but there are shades, and the two girls have drawn them all.
I like what you've done with the place, I joke.
Valerie tosses me something which I catch reflexively. A robe tie.
Thanks, we were going for minimalist. Savannah and I thought that it would display our artwork better if there weren't any distractions. You okay with the sash?
Thinking back to the yacht and Reed, I tell her, that'll work. I wrap the length around my waist.
Where's Savannah?
I'm in the bathroom,
she hisses out.
A sharp knock on the door signals Daniel's arrival.
Showtime, I whisper, and then open the door.
Chapter 28.
I have thought you might be sitting me up, but I just saw the royals drinking. Reed looks ready to go balls deep into Abby tonight.
Daniel runs his eyes insolently over me, and then shifts to Valerie.
And you, Val, I never suspected you were such a dirty girl, but maybe I should have guessed.
Because you're both low-class and trashy, I finish for him silently. Valerie's mouth twists in a noticeable sneer. Since she isn't doing a good job of pretending to be hot for Daniel, I hurry over to distract him.
What do you want to do first? I stroke a hand over his shoulders and steer him toward the table in the middle of the room. It must have been too heavy for Valerie and Savannah to move.
How about the two of you go down on each other? He suggests.
No lead up, just straight to the action. With a harder hand than necessary, I push him down onto the table.
I think you need a lesson in anticipation. Let us dance for you a little.
Leaning back against his arms, he gives us a superior nod of his chin.
Fine, but I want to see your hands on each other and lots of skin.
Valerie gathers herself and steps forward.
How about we give you a massage? You ever have one of those? A massage? Sure. I get them at my dad's club all the time.
But from two girls, with a happy ending. She wiggles her fingers.
Like Ella said, let's not rush things.
We can give you a massage, and then you can watch us do our thing. After all, you should get off first.
Daniel ponders this offer for a moment, and then agrees.
Yeah, that sounds right. You bitches can wait your turn.
He winks at the end to signal we're supposed to take his bitches comment as a joke.
Neither of us laugh, and it takes superhuman effort not to punch his smug face.
Let's help you out of your clothes, I say sweetly.
Fortunately, Daniel doesn't suspect a thing. He'd be mistrustful of Reed or Gideon, but not two trashy girls who, if not for their rich relatives, would probably be selling their bodies on the streets anyway. That's how his mind operates, which is why our little charade is possible. Because he's Daniel Delacorte, son of a judge, lacrosse player, a guy with a sterling reputation who nobody would ever suspect of being such a douche. I don't doubt for a second that Savannah's cousin is probably from a less successful branch of the family. Valerie and I steel ourselves to put our hands on his body, but to our relief he doesn't need help. He drops his shorts, pulls down his boxers, and has his t-shirt over his head before we can take our next breath.
Someone's eager, Valerie mutters under her breath.
Daniel licks his lips.
Where do you want me?
She places her hands on her hips and pretends to consider the question.
How about there? She points to a nest of pillows situated right in front of the windows.
Daniel strides over and kneels down on the soft cushions.
Don't forget to keep your teeth to yourself. Maybe cover them with your lips.
That's the last instruction he's ever going to give me, I think. And then I nonchalantly swipe a fruit bowl off the table and hit him over the head with it. He rears up with a shout.
What the hell?
Stunned, he clamps one hand to the back of his head.
I told you the bowl was too weak,
Savannah says, bursting out of the bathroom. Before Daniel can leap away, she whips up a bottle of hairspray and sends a stream of stinging solvent straight into his face.
Motherfucker! You three are dead meat! Daniel roars. He stumbles to his left and bangs into the windows. The three of us laugh.
I don't want to kill him, just maim him, I remind Savannah.
How about the candlestick? I swing the heavy silver weapon and strike Daniel in the shoulder. Savannah brings the matching one down on the top of his head, and Daniel slumps over. Valerie picks up one sash and tosses me the other one.
You're right, Ella. This guy is a creep.
As quickly as possible, we truss him up like a turkey. With Daniel momentarily dazed, it's easy for us to secure his hands behind his back, tie his ankles together, and then loop a length of sash between the two sets of bindings.
Too bad we don't have tape.
I pick up a banana from the floor and toss it in the air. We could tape this to his ass.
That'd be awesome, Valerie crows.
Savannah scowls.
I have something to stick up his ass.
She stomps over, draws back her leg, and delivers the harshest kick I've seen outside a movie. Apparently smashing a 5-pound candlestick into his skull didn't quite lessen her anger toward him. The impact of her delicate foot to his butt is surprisingly hard. It jolts Daniel from his stupor, and he releases a yowl of pain. An ugly smile stretches across Savannah's face. Valerie and I watch, as she bends close to whisper something to him, something that makes him shudder. Then she straightens up and runs a hand over her hair, smoothing all the strands to lie flat against her pretty head.
I'm ready. I don't want to spend another minute with this piece of garbage.
Hold up, Valerie says.
We turn to see her throwing an apple up in the air. A grin slowly spreads across my face.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I ask. The plan is so evil. I love it. Savannah starts laughing and is almost laughing too hard to help us pull open Daniel's mouth and shove the apple inside. But one dazed, naked boy is no match for the three of us.
Let's go.
I run to the door and find Sawyer there.
We're ready.
So are we,
he answers with a grin.
Did you kill him? Because that yelp back there sounded bad.
I think Savannah wanted to, but we held her back.
I've always liked that chick, Sawyer says.
I lean back and gesture for the girls to exit. Savannah and Valerie slip out the sliding doors leading to the beach. Once they're down at the shore, I hit the lights and the button for the remote control curtains. The Worthingtons made this whole thing easy for us. As the lights flicker on and the curtains part, Sawyer and I haul ass after the girls, who we find standing with Sebastian. Once we arrive, Seb places a hand on the shoulders of Valerie and Savannah.
Can't believe we're missing the show,
he says glumly. I'm bummed, too, but we decided it wasn't a good idea for me and the girls to be part of the crowd during Daniel's unveiling. If any of his buddies figure out we were behind it, they might turn on us. The twins are down here serving as our bodyguards in case that happens. We stand and wait, straining for the sounds that will mark the reveal of Daniel. Tied up and on display, like a pig at a luau. The first noises we hear are a chorus of gasps. There's a shout that we can't make out, and then a moment of silence. After what seems like a long time to me, but must feel like an eternity to the naked and bound Daniel, there's a shout of,
"Oh my God!"
and,
"Holy shit, is that Daniel Delacorte?"
Other voices join in, until it seems like every guest is commenting on the scene before them. There's clapping, whistling, and screaming, and for some reason, I start shaking. I tremble so hard I have to lean against Sawyer. He puts an arm around me and rubs a hand against my side.
I don't know why I'm so weak, I stutter.
You're coming off an adrenaline high.
He digs around in his pocket, and then hands me a roll of mints.
That's all I got. Sorry.
It's okay, I mumble, and shove two in my mouth. I concentrate on chewing the candies, and whether it's the tiny shock of sugar that helps, or just focusing on something other than the stunt I just participated in, my shaking stops and I start warming up. Where's the rest of the royal crew? Sebastian gives me an amused glance, as if he knows exactly which royal I'm curious about.
Witnessing Daniel's humiliation with the rest of Astor Park?
and making sure the right story is being spread.
What story is that?
The truth. He got beat up by a girl.
Three girls, I correct.
It's a better story when it's only one girl.
Sawyer pipes up. But don't you want to take credit, too?
Publicly? Nah. It'd get back to Dad, and then he'll be on our asses about the military school thing again.
Sawyer grins.
But we'll know we did this, and that's all that matters.
A commotion at the top of the embankment catches my attention. The three other royals are coming. Sawyer grabs me by the arm and herds me down the beach. Valerie shouts after us that she's catching a ride home with Savannah, and I give her a quick wave as I race off with the twins. Their brothers aren't far behind us.
You should have seen the look on his face, Gideon starts.
Man, his dick is teeny-weeny, Easton crows. Was that shrinkage or is he really that small?
The bruise on his forehead looked nasty. Did that come from you?
Reed sounds impressed. Three royal brothers converge on us, all talking at once. Whoa, 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 I raise my hands. I can't handle all of you at once.
He did good.
Gideon surprises me by ruffling my hair.
It was perfect,
Reed drawls, and the approval in his eyes makes me feel warm and gooey inside. Easton picks me up and whirls me around.
You're a boss, Ella. Remind me never to piss you off.
A racket of shouts and curses has us turning back toward the Worthington place. Easton lets me slide to the ground as we see a crowd form on the top of the ridge. There's a splash. Did someone just get pushed into the pool?
He just dunked Penny Lockwood Smith into the pool!
Someone from the party yells before erupting in laughter.
Here he comes, Gideon says with a sigh.
He is Daniel, who's charging through a line of people. Even in the dark blue of the night, we can see that he's furious.
Don't let him bite you, Easton murmurs in my ear. He might have rabies.
Daniel stops at the edge of lawn and scans the shoreline. When he sees us, he roars, points, and then leaps down onto the sand in one jump. It's an impressive athletic move.
Look at him go, I marvel.
He is on the lacrosse team, Sawyer reminds me.
I'm going to kill you, all of you, starting with you, you gutter trash.
Reed's face breaks out in a grin as he turns to the rest of us. Figures that this would be the moment he unleashes one of his rare smiles.
That sounded like a threat, right?
Easton nods.
I think Ella's in imminent danger. You know Dad wouldn't like that.
Happy as I've ever seen him, Reed pushes me behind him as Daniel runs down the sand, clad in only his khaki shorts. Small pinpoints of light pop up as a number of the partygoers decide that this scene should be immortalized. The royals shuffle me backward, and I have to force my way between the twins to see what's going on. And I'm just in time, too, because as soon as I stick my head out between the mountain of royal muscle, Daniel launches himself at Reed with a growl. Reed takes one step forward and smashes his fist into Daniel's jaw. Daniel drops like a stone. Chapter 29. We're all in high spirits as we head back to the mansion. I shoot Valerie a quick text to make sure she's cool driving home with Savannah, and she assures me it's fine. It turns out, the Carringtons live around the corner from the Montgomerys. Easton walks beside me. The twins are up ahead, still laughing about the scene we'd left back at the Worthington house. Their voices float toward us.
He knocked him out cold in 1 second flat, Sawyer is chuckling.
New record for Reed,
Sebastian agrees. Reed and Gideon trail behind us. Every time I turn around, their heads are bent close in conversation. It's obvious those two have secrets that Easton and the twins don't know about. And that bothers me, because I was really starting to buy into the motto about royals sticking together. We reach the house, but I halt at the steps leading up to it. I'm going to walk along the water for a bit, I tell Easton.
I'll walk with you.
I shake my head. I kind of want to be alone. No offense.
None taken.
He leans in and smacks a kiss on my cheek.
That was some first-class vengeance tonight, little sis. You're my new hero.
After he's gone, I leave my shoes on a rock and walk barefoot along the soft sand. The moon lights my way, and I haven't taken 20 steps when I hear footsteps behind me. I don't need to turn around to know it's Reed.
You shouldn't be out here alone.
What?
You think Daniel is going to jump out from behind a boulder and attack me?
Reed reaches me. I stop walking and turn toward him. As usual, his gorgeous face makes my breath hitch.
He might. You humiliated him pretty good tonight.
I have to laugh.
And you knocked him out. He's probably at home right now icing his face.
Reed shrugs.
He had it coming.
I stare at the water. He stares at me. I can feel his gaze burning into my face, and I shift my head again, smiling wryly. Let's hear it.
Hear what?
Some more lies. You know how last night was just you doing me a favor, you don't really want me, yada yada. I wave my hand. To my surprise, he laughs.
Oh my God. Was that a laugh? Reed Royal laughs, folks. Someone call the Vatican because an honest-to-God miracle has occurred.
That gets me another chuckle.
You're so annoying,
he grumbles.
Yeah, but you still like me.
He goes quiet. I think he's going to stay that way, but then he curses under his breath and says,
Yeah, maybe I do.
I feign amazement.
Two miracles in one night? Is the world ending?
Reed grabs a chunk of my hair and gives it a tug.
That's enough out of you.
I step closer to the water, but it's even more freezing than usual. I squeal when it touches my toes, then dart back.
I hate the Atlantic, I declare. The Pacific is way better.
You lived on the West Coast?
He sounds grudgingly curious. West, east, north, south, we lived everywhere. Never stayed in one place for long. I think the longest was a year, and that was in Chicago. Or, I guess Seattle was the longest, 2 years. But I don't count that because my mom was sick and we didn't have a choice but to stay put.
Why did you move around so much?
Money, mostly. If mom lost her job, we had to pick up and go where the money was. Or she'd fall in love and we'd move in with her latest boyfriend.
She had a lot of boyfriends?
His voice is harsh. I'm honest with him. Yeah, she fell in love a lot.
Then she wasn't really in love.
I look over quizzically.
That's lust, Reed says with a shrug. Not love.
Maybe. But to her it was love. I hesitate. Did your parents love each other? I shouldn't have asked, because he goes stiffer than a board.
My dad claims they did, but he sure as shit never acted like a man in love.
I think Reed is wrong. Just hearing Callum talk about Maria, you can tell that he loved her deeply. I don't know why his sons refused to see that. You guys all miss her, huh? I move the subject somewhere safer, but it doesn't erase the tension in his face. Reed doesn't answer. It's okay to say it. I miss my mom every day. She was the most important person in my life.
She was a stripper.
His mocking reply makes my shoulders tighten. So? I come to Mom's defense instantly. Her stripping paid our bills. It kept a roof over our heads. It paid for my dance classes. Sharp blue eyes focus on me.
Did she force you to strip when she got sick?
No, she never knew about it. I told her I was waiting tables, which was true. I did do that, and I also worked at a truck stop. But it wasn't enough to pay all her medical bills. So I stole her ID and got a job at one of the clubs. I sigh. I don't expect you to understand. You've never had to worry about money a day in your life.
No, I haven't.
He agrees. I'm not sure if I move first or if he does, but we're walking again. A few feet of distance stretch between us at first, but as we walk, we get closer and closer, until our bare arms are brushing with every step. His skin is warm, and my arm prickles each time we make contact.
My mother was kind,
he finally reveals. That's what Callum said, too. I think of the woman that Steve married. Dinah, the awful shrew,
who has naked pictures of herself all over her home. And I wonder how two friends could have married such dramatically different women.
She cared about people. Too much, maybe. She was a sucker for a sob story. She always went out of her way to help people.
Was she good to you and your brothers? Reed nods.
She loved us. She was always there for us, giving advice, helping with our homework. And every day she'd spend alone time with each of us. I guess she didn't want any of us to feel neglected or like she had a favorite. And on the weekends we'd all do stuff together.
Like what? I ask curiously. He shrugs.
Museums, the zoo, kiting.
Kiting?
He rolls his eyes at me.
Flying a kite, Ella. Don't tell me you've never done that.
Nope. I purse my lips. I did go to a zoo once, though. One of my mom's boyfriends took us to this shitty petting zoo in the middle of nowhere. They had a goat and a llama, and this little monkey that threw poop at me when I walked by. Reed throws his head back and laughs. It's the sexiest sound I've ever heard. And then it turned out the zoo was a front for a drug-dealing operation. The boyfriend was just there to buy weed. Neither of us comment on the drastic differences in our childhoods, but I know we're both thinking about it. We keep walking. His fingers graze mine. I hold my breath, wondering if he's going to take my hand, but he doesn't, and the disappointment is too much to bear. I stop in my tracks and meet his eyes. Not a good idea, because I know he can see the longing on my face. It causes his gaze to grow shuttered, and I bite back my frustration. You like me, I announce. His jaw ticks. You want me. Another tick. Damn it, Reed, why can't you just admit it? What's the point in lying? When he doesn't answer, I whirl around and march off, my bare feet kicking up sand. Suddenly I'm yanked backward, and my shoulders collide with a solid male chest, stealing the breath from my lungs. Reed's chin comes down to rest on my shoulder, his lips millimeters from my ear.
You want me to say it?
He whispers.
Fine, I'll say it.
I want you. I fucking want you. I feel the hard length of him pressing against my butt, and I know he's not lying. As a thrill shoots up my spine, Reed twists me around, and his mouth crashes down on mine. The kiss is hot enough to turn the Atlantic into lava. My lips part, and he slides his tongue past them, devouring my mouth in greedy strokes that leave me breathless. I cling to his broad shoulders, then slide my hands down to his trim waist. He groans and cups my bottom, rotating his hips so I can feel every inch of him. Then, after one more drugging kiss, he releases me and staggers backward.
I'm leaving for college next year, he says hoarsely. I'm leaving, and chances are I'm never coming back. I'm not selfish enough to start something I can't finish. I'm not going to do that to you.
I don't care, I want to say. I'll take him any way I can, even if it's for a short time. But I don't voice the words, because I know they won't sway him.
Let's go back to the house,
he mumbles when my silence drags on.
I follow him without a word, my lips still tingling from his kiss, my heart still aching from his rejection. I'm just drifting off to sleep when my bedroom door creaks open. I groggily lift my head. Within seconds, I'm wide awake. Reed climbs into bed beside me. He doesn't say a word. The room is too dark, so I can't see his expression. But I can feel the warmth of his body as he slides closer, the heat of his palm as he strokes my cheek before grasping my chin and tilting my head toward his. What are you doing? I whisper. His voice is pained.
I decided to be selfish.
Happiness explodes in my chest. I wrap my arms around his neck and pull him closer. His lips hover over mine, but he doesn't kiss me.
Just for tonight,
he tells me. That's what you said last night, too.
This time I mean it.
And then he kisses me, and any protest I might have expressed gets lost in the hurried joining of our mouths. He groans when my tongue touches his, Strong hips rock against me, his hard-on rubbing my thigh. I move so that we're both on our sides, face to face, mouths fused together. Fuck, he chokes out, and then his hand slips under my shirt, into my panties. His fingers tease me, pressing against sensitive spots that make me moan against his lips. We touch each other, running our hands over all the bare skin we can find, neither one of us coming up for air, as we practically eat each other's faces off. It isn't long before the knot of tension inside me breaks apart in a million little pieces. Pleasure soars through my body as I gasp into his mouth. Reed trembles against me, and this time, I'm the one swallowing his groan of pleasure. Afterward, we lie tangled up together, kissing for what feels like hours. I never want him to go. I want him to stay in this bed forever. But just like last night, he's gone when I open my eyes the next morning. I wonder if I dreamed it, but when I roll over, I smell him on my pillows. His shampoo, his soap, the spicy aftershave he wears. He was here. It was real. The loss hits me hard, and not even the sunshine streaming in from the curtains can ease the disappointment I wake up with. But then the disappointment is replaced with a jolt of panic, because a high-pitched shriek suddenly rings out through the mansion. I think it came from the front parlor, and I jump out of bed, throwing open my door, just as another shriek assaults my eardrums.
You are not getting away with this!
Brooke is screaming.
Not this time, Callum Royle.
Chapter 30. I reach the railing at the same time Easton pops out of his bedroom. His dark hair sticks up in all directions, and his eyes are bloodshot as he comes up beside me.
What the hell?
He mumbles. We both look down at the foyer, where Brooke and Callum are facing off. It's comical, almost, because she's more than a head shorter than him, thus posing the least threatening picture on the planet.
It's my right to be there,
Brooke shouts, jamming the center of Callum's chest with one sharp fingernail.
No, it isn't. You're not a royal, and you're not an O'Halloran. It's not your place.
Then tell me, what is my place? Why do I put up with all your bullshit, then? You treat me like I'm your mistress instead of your girlfriend. Where's my ring, Callum? Where the fuck is my ring?
I can't see Callum's face, but I don't miss the tension in his shoulders.
My wife's body is barely even cold, he roars.
Beside me, Easton tenses up too. I reach out and take his hand, and he squeezes my fingers tight enough to bring a sting of pain.
You expect me to just remarry like it's no big deal?
2 years, Brooke interrupts. She's been dead for 2 years. Get over it.
Callum stumbles as if she's struck him.
I won't let you string me along anymore. I won't.
Brooke lunges forward and grabs the front of his dress shirt, bunching it between her fingers.
I am done with you. You hear me? Done.
With that, she shoves his chest and spins toward the door, her high heels slapping the marble floor. Callum doesn't go after her, and when she realizes it, she whirls around and points a finger at him.
If I walk out right now, I am never coming back.
His voice is colder than ice.
Don't let the door hit you on the ass on your way out.
Easton snickers.
You monster!
Brooke shrieks. She flings open the door with so much force that a gust of air blows through the foyer, and I feel it from the second floor. Her blonde head and mini-dress-clad body disappear through the threshold. She slams the door with equal force. Silence crashes over the foyer. I see a flash of movement in the corner of my eye, and I turn around to find the other royals standing behind us. The twins look sleepy. Gideon looks shocked. Reed's face is impassive, but I swear I see a glimpse of triumph in his eyes. Easton doesn't even try to hide his glee.
Did that really just happen?
He asks us, shaking his head in amazement. Callum hears his son's voice, and his head tilts up to the railing. He looks stricken, but not devastated that his girlfriend just stormed off.
"Dad," Easton calls out, grinning from ear to ear. "You the man. Come up here and give me a high five."
His father's expression turns weary. Instead of answering Easton, Callum flicks his gaze toward me.
"Since you're awake, Ella, why don't you come down to my study? We need to have a little chat."
Then he exits the foyer. I bite my lip, hesitant to follow him. I suddenly remember what he just said to Brooke, how she's not a royal or an O'Halloran, and my anxiety grows. I have a feeling they were fighting about Steve, which means that, indirectly, it was also about me.
"Go," Reed murmurs when I don't move from the railing. As usual, I instinctively obey his command. It's like he has a hold on me, and I'm not sure I like it, but I'm helpless to stop it.
I walk downstairs on wobbly legs and find Callum in the study. He's already hit the liquor cabinet, pouring himself a glass of scotch when I walk in.
"Are you okay?" I ask quietly.
He waves the glass in his hand, causing liquid to splash over the rim.
"I'm fine. It's fine." "I'm sorry you had to wake up to that."
"Do you think it's really over with you two?" I can't help but feel bad for Brooke. I've seen a bitchy side to her, definitely, but she's also been nice to me. Or at least I think she has. Brooke Davidson is a tough nut to crack.
"Probably."
He sips his drink.
"She wasn't entirely out of line. 2 years is a long time for a woman to wait."
Callum sets the glass on his desk and runs a hand through his hair.
"The reading of the will is scheduled for 2 weeks from tomorrow."
I look blankly at him. "The will?"
"Yes. Steve's will."
I'm still confused. "Didn't that already happen? I thought you said there was a funeral."
"There was, but the estate hasn't been settled yet. Dinah and I started probate after Steve's death, but the reading itself was put off until you could be located."
I bet Dinah must have loved that. Do I really have to be there? Doesn't Dinah inherit everything because she's his wife?
"It's a lot more complicated than that."
He doesn't elaborate.
"But yes, you need to be there. I'll be there too, as your legal guardian, and so will Dinah and our lawyers. She left for Paris last night, but she'll be back in 2 weeks, and then we'll get everything straightened out. It'll be painless, I promise."
With Dinah O'Halloran in attendance? Yeah, right. Painful is more like it. But I just nod and say, "Okay, if I have to go, I'll go." He nods too, and picks up his drink again. Callum takes off shortly after to play golf. He claims that walking the 18 links helps clear his mind. I worry about how loaded he plans to get, and then remind myself that he's the adult and I'm the 17-year-old, so I bite my tongue. One by one, the royals leave. Gideon heads off before lunch to go back to college. He always looks happier leaving than arriving. Soon it's just me. I heat up leftover quiche and then consider going for a walk on the beach. It's only been a month at the royal household, but that month has been full of, well, life. Stuff is always happening. It's not always good stuff, but I haven't been alone. And until now, in this moment of solitude, I realize I don't like being alone. It's nice to have friends and family around, even if the family is super dysfunctional. I wonder if that's the reason Gideon keeps coming back.
"Did you save some of that egg thing for me?"
Reed's voice makes me jump. I slap a hand over my heart to keep it from leaping out of my chest. "You scared me. I thought you left with Easton."
"Nope." He crosses the room to peer over my shoulder. "What else is in the fridge?"
"Food," I answer. He tugs on my hair playfully, at least I hope it's playfully, and goes to investigate his options. Door in one hand, he stands in front of the fridge, leans, really, with the other hand braced on the cabinet, until the entire room is cold with refrigerated air. "Problem?" I take a break from eating so I can admire the sexy line of his body
and the way his muscles bunch and flex as he rummages for food.
"Don't suppose you'd make me a sandwich?"
he says from somewhere in the interior of the refrigerator.